Chapter 4. Prove It. Washington, D.C. The guard frowned as she compared Karis's photo ID to her exhausted countenance.
"Wait here,"
she said, turning on her heel and disappearing indoors. Lucy craned her neck, studying the holding bay. It was similar to the gate she and Ruth had entered through a couple of weeks back, only there were fewer soldiers patrolling this portion of the wall. Their guard conferred with someone behind a doorway. Lucy shifted in her seat anxiously. She was exhausted and on edge. Her paranoid brain turned every minor crackle into the fuzzing electrical precursor to a lightning strike from one of the mist creatures. She tugged compulsively at the hem of her jacket. The screams and burning bodies of the ambushed soldiers and farmers haunted her. When the guard returned, her hands were clad in blue latex gloves, and she was carrying a tray.
"Swab your mouths, then drop the sticks in one of the jars,"
she ordered, holding the tray through the window. Lucy picked hers up and hesitated, examining the cotton bud at the tip of the wood.
"What's this for?" said Ruth.
"If you want to enter the city, you gotta do the swab,"
said the guard, resting the tray on the frame of the lowered passenger window. A muffled megaphone echoed from inside the city, followed by the distant roar of a crowd. The guard turned her head toward the sound and sighed wearily.
Karis hastily swabbed her mouth, then shoved the glistening sample into Lucy's hand in exchange for Lucy's dry one. The guard looked back at the three newcomers.
"You done, or what?"
Lucy and Ruth each deposited their samples into a beaker, while Karis quickly swabbed her mouth a second time before following suit. The three solutions turned from blue to green.
A hissing, moaning sound came from the rear of the vehicle, followed by a clang.
"I'm gonna need to see inside the trailer,"
said the guard, setting the tray down on a crate behind her.
"That's not possible," said Karis.
"Open it up, or you're not getting inside the city,"
said the guard irritably. "It's classified. We've got a research delivery for the hospital. It's really better for everyone if you don't bother yourself with—" Karis began.
"To hell with that,"
said the guard, stepping away from the door and marching to the rear of the vehicle, pistol in hand.
"Don't go in there,"
cried Karis, leaping after the soldier.
Lucy climbed out after her, rushing to the rear where the soldier pulled the lab door open.
"What the hell?"
cried the soldier. Startled by the influx of daylight, the powder-tipped mutilated turtle let out a desperate rasp, straining its head forwards. It rocked sideways against its restraints, which were covered in pink saliva on one side. It fell from the operating table onto the floor with a heavy thud, landing on its back, where it let out a pained rasp, as four screw-shaped tusks deployed themselves uselessly into the air.
"Oh, shit!"
yelled the soldier, firing twice into the turtle's soft, powder-covered underbelly.
"No!"
cried Lucy, barging the soldier out of the way and staring in horror at the turtle dillo. Gen water and blood seeped out from the bullet holes in its belly. One by one, its flailing limbs fell still, and its long, slender tongue fell limp across the floor.
"You idiot! Do you have any idea what you've done?"
cried Lucy, looming over the soldier with rage.
"Get down, all of you, on the ground, now!"
came a cry from the wall as a sentry trained his rifle on the group, while two more soldiers rushed into the courtyard through the doorway.
Lucy, Ruth, and Karis knelt down swiftly, placing their hands behind their heads.
"What the hell happened?"
said the sergeant, inspecting the trailer as her colleague rose to her feet.
"They were trying to bring a hostile into this city, ma'am. I neutralized the creature before this one blindsided me,"
said the soldier, pointing to Lucy angrily as she picked herself up off the ground.
"We told you to leave it. Now you've killed a vital research asset. You've set us back by days,"
protested Karis.
"No one's told us about any research assets. You brought a hostile into the city when we have a strict shoot-on-sight policy.
Y'all should know better. On your feet," said the sergeant.
"I'll be reporting this," said Karis, standing up angrily.
"I'd watch your tone, soldier, if you still want to get inside the city,"
said the sergeant darkly. She slammed the door shut and signaled the other soldiers to stand down.
"I suggest you three learn to follow orders quickly. The last thing we need is a friendly fire incident,"
said the sergeant, heading back for the doorway.
The guard glared at Lucy as she, Ruth, and Karis returned to the cockpit.
The orange lights flashed above the second gate as the metal barrier retracted with a series of clunks until it came to rest halfway, just wide enough for the lab vehicle to pass through.
"Something's going on,"
remarked Ruth as they made their way through the city towards the hospital. A soldier stood before a makeshift barricade comprised of cones and tape and waved them away from the main road. Behind him, a group of several hundred protesters were staging a sit-in, blocking the entire street. Each wore a white armband and chanted in response to their enigmatic leader's proclamations through the megaphone. Lucy recognized the speaker as Rhea, the woman she'd seen stirring a crowd on her first Sunday in the city. Her support had clearly burgeoned in the past week or so. Lucy wondered if Fliss was in the crowd. The girl had been intrigued by the woman, and who couldn't blame her? She was a powerful orator. Rhea stood before the seated congregation with her wavy black hair tied back in a ponytail and castigated the government behind her. Lucy heard little of Rhea's words as they diverted away from the protest, but her energy was infectious. A sense of injustice and oppression ignited in her belly. As they headed towards the hospital, she felt ready for a reckoning. She had no idea what state Lopez would be in by now, or whether he'd even still be alive. But she was here to fight for him. Their specimen had been killed, but they had the white powder, irrefutable proof that Harvey's repugnant tactics were unnecessary. The streets were bustling as workers milled about on their lunch breaks, reading, talking, or if they were lucky, listening to offline music via a colleague's solar-charged phone. Each worker had an empty bowl or tub beside them. A handful were still eating, savoring every mouthful of that day's lunch ration. The adjacent block was less jovial. Its workers were lined up on the sidewalk, hungrily awaiting their portions. Some wore white armbands. They tended to be in groups of three or four, talking to other armband wearers. Before them were two military catering trucks, each serving one side of the street. The staff moved fast, ladling out hot portions at a blistering pace, often to the complaints of their customers, knowing the next block was waiting hungrily, as were the blocks after that. They continued onward, following signs for the hospital. Lucy's eyes fell on an electronic billboard, a news feed, presumably direct from the government, scrolled across the bottom. Attacks. President accuses striking workers of undermining national security. Secretary of Education unveils new intranet resources for... Above the scrolling feed was a large image with the title Public Health Warning. It showed two smiling workers in hard hats. The pair greeted each other with a wave, despite only being positioned a foot apart. Beside their image was a short message reading, "Talk, don't touch. Contact costs lives." The screen transitioned to a severely lesioned patient, along with a list of symptoms to watch out for, before concluding with a message urging citizens to report to the hospital for treatment if they developed any of the above, and to do their patriotic duty by reporting anyone they suspected of being unwell. As the billboard faded from view, another police cordon barred the road ahead.
"They're spreading," said Karis, leaning over the steering wheel for a better view.
Lucy followed her gaze. Inside the cordon stood three discreet office buildings. The central stone building was partially destroyed. Half of the front wall had crumbled to the ground, exposing the plant-covered desks and levels inside. The exterior was covered from top to bottom in a thick coat of purple and blue algae. Rust-colored branches had erupted from the bowels of the building through its windows and doorways. The branches stretched out onto the street and buildings around. Likewise, the algae had spread to the two neighboring buildings, which each had succumbed by half. At the foot of the building was a van, attended by two people in hazmat suits. A broad yellow pipe trailed from it into the stone entrance. Yellow smoke poured out of the shattered windows in the level above. As they passed by, Lucy glimpsed another building behind the central one. The roof had caved in. Its brick was scorched and its windows shattered. The vines protruding through its frames were charred and gray, like aged driftwood. A flash of movement brought Lucy's eyes back to the first building. A lemur-like creature leapt out of the second level onto the ground below. It appeared to be choking. It lay, twitching, unable to run more than two paces before another seizure took hold. One of the hazmat suit figures retrieved a shotgun from the van and terminated the creature with a single shot.
Lucy gasped as a second creature scampered out of the fumigated building, this time from a side window. It scurried across a rusty vine into the neighboring building, where it vanished. Before Lucy could relay this, a siren rang out across the city. The people on the sidewalks reacted with panic. They turned and fled for the nearest building, with fear written across their faces.
"You heard that before?" said Ruth as they watched people dash by. "No, but it doesn't sound good," said Karis.
A busload of people were pouring out of the vehicle and into the nearest buildings. Karis hit the gas and swerved across an intersection, making a beeline for the hospital. The siren rang out again in pulses as they skidded into the hospital parking lot.
"Inside, quickly,"
yelled Karis, sprinting from the trailer. They rushed to the main entrance, but the doors were locked shut. The three of them banged against the glass, calling to the security personnel inside, but the staff shook their heads in fear.
"This way,"
called Ruth, forcing open a fire exit. They rushed down the steps into a pitch-black basement, sealing the door behind them. The piercing siren became muffled, but quickly gave way to an altogether more sinister sound. Rustling and moaning echoed through the darkness. The stench of human excrement hit Lucy's nostrils hard.
"Don't move," breathed Karis. Ruth clicked her flashlight on. A shaft of light shone down the corridor, revealing a long boulevard of glass cubicles. Side avenues branched in all directions, suggesting the network extended across the entire level. Lucy and Karis flicked on their flashlights and examined the cells around them. Nausea swept over Lucy. Rows of infecteds stretched before them. Many of the prisoners shielded their eyes and shuffled further into the corners, shying away from the prying lights. Others sat despondently and stared at the newcomers in vacant bewilderment. A handful rose to the glass and yelled, banging their palms against the walls, causing a ripple of fearful murmurs throughout the enclosure. Aside from the bedraggled human occupants, the cells were barren, containing only a waste bucket and a thin blanket no bigger than a bath towel. A cry of pain sounded out from the middle of the floor, from one of the cells beyond their corridor. It was swiftly followed by the slamming of a door and the jangling of keys. "Who goes there?" called Ruth, raising her rifle.
Footsteps echoed towards them, approaching through one of the dark avenues ahead. Harvey.
"I might ask you the same thing,"
replied the director.
"Would you be so kind as to dip your light? It's somewhat dazzling."
As Harvey approached them through the darkness, Lucy felt a knot in her stomach. A pair of night vision goggles hung around his neck, and a pair of discarded latex gloves protruded from the lip of his grubby lab coat pocket. Lucy could feel herself reaching for the trigger. She could end him there and then. She could liberate the shivering, hallucinating, lesion-covered infected all around them. She could get revenge for the torture he'd meted out on Lopez and God knows who else. But loath as she was to admit it, she needed him. She needed his trust, his stamp of approval on her diversionary project. If she killed him, the authorities would find out, one way or another. They'd never listen to her or Karis again. The powder would never see the light of day. All that would survive would be Harvey's bloody legacy. She let out a deep, shuddering breath and edged her finger away from the trigger.
"Karis, back so soon. And my goodness, is that Lucy Young?" said Harvey, beaming. "You know this creep?" said Ruth.
"Unfortunately," said Lucy.
"I don't believe we've had the pleasure. I'm Harvey, director of pathology at the hospital, and you are... I'm wondering what kind of person hangs out in a pitch-black basement that stinks of shit and appears to be full of slaves," said Ruth. "Someone searching for the truth, my dear. It would appear that the dreadful disease affecting our friends down here is also something of a blessing, if you'll excuse the parlance. Indeed, these brave subjects have become both our greatest burden and our greatest asset. But I think you'll agree, that's quite enough about me. What, may I ask, brings two scientists and a soldier down to our humble basement?"
"A siren went off as we were driving here. The hospital wouldn't let us in the lobby, even though everyone seemed to be running for cover. So we broke in here," said Karis.
"A sensible move," said Harvey, rubbing one of his fluffy sideburns thoughtfully. "Butterflies,
They're the latest manifestation of the D4 pathogen to be plaguing the city. That's the third siren in 2 days. They are, dare I say it, devastatingly beautiful. But that's something of an irrelevance. As with all things, they are an opportunity for us to learn.
Is that what you tell the people you've trapped down here? Said Lucy.
The darkness is for their comfort, Lucy. Many of them become hypersensitive to light during the course of their treatment. I would love to share some of our latest findings with you all, and indeed to hear how you got on, Karis.
How we got on, you mean?
Said Ruth, revealing her blood pouch.
Ah, I see. There are no secrets between friends. Quite right, and for which I thank you. You've tripled my sample size, though I'm curious as to how you achieved this. Did you divide the additional blood pouches 3 ways, or did the first one last longer than we expected?
Maybe we can talk upstairs, said Karis bluntly.
Of course. This way, please.
They followed him past rows of cowering infecteds to the elevator. As they approached, a thin white glow appeared in the crack between the shutters. The glow descended from the level above. With a ding, the doors slid open, casting a shaft of light across the corridor. Alexei, the pathology receptionist, stood in the elevator, clutching a tray with empty syringes.
Ah, Alexei, where were you? You've missed the boat, I'm afraid. My rounds here are done for the time being, said Harvey jovially.
Alexei stared straight ahead. Lucy trained her flashlight on him, revealing a sheen of sweat across his skin. His lips parted fractionally, but no words came out.
Alexei, said Harvey, edging forwards.
The receptionist slumped to his knees, then collapsed, spread-eagled across the floor, sending the tray's contents scattering. Lucy's eyes fixed instantly upon the bleach mark at the top of his neck. A transparent wing flapped gently upon it, dissolving further into his skin with each slowing beat.
Get away from the elevator! Quickly, this way!
Said Harvey, spotting the same thing. The group hastened after him back down the corridor. The wedge of light continued to spill outwards, extending and contracting as the doors jammed against Alexei's body. Harvey pulled out a set of keys and fumbled through them, searching for the right one.
Hurry!
Urged Karis, as a fluttering shape emerged from the elevator. Harvey clicked the lock open and dashed inside the cell, beckoning the others in behind him.
What the hell?
Said Lucy as her eyes fell on the slumped figure in the corner. The woman was unconscious, and her hands were zip-tied behind her back.
Ignore that. Kill the lights,
urged Harvey, sealing the door. All three flicked their flashlights off, leaving them with only the elevator's overspill. As the butterfly crossed from the light into the shadows of the corridor, an iridescence spread across its wings. The gentle white glow was soothing. Lucy felt herself relaxing as the butterfly bobbed through the air towards them. The insect landed delicately on the cell's clear wall and climbed steadily upwards towards the join between the glass and the ceiling. It explored the crevice further, then tried flying into the glass several times more, before fluttering away down the corridor. Karis let out a sigh of relief.
Don't be fooled, it's not gone. It's looking for a way in, said Harvey. How do we get out? Said Ruth.
I can kill it, but it's risky. It requires a volunteer.
For what? Said Karis warily.
Bait.
I vote we use you, said Lucy.
A reasonable suggestion, Lucy, but I cannot be both bait and killer. The maneuver requires 2 people.
I'll do it.
Excellent. You'll have to remove your blood jacket, then roll your sleeve up, said Harvey.
Karis took off her yellow-striped flak jacket, then rolled her left sleeve up to her elbow. Harvey produced a small flask from his pocket, unscrewed the nozzle, and sprayed a transparent solution onto Karis's skin.
When it lands, strike the match and hold it to your arm, said Harvey, handing her a matchbox.
Wait. This stuff's flammable?
Said Karis, sniffing the sheen nervously.
But of course. You can't swat or crush these butterflies. They dissolve upon such contact, into the host. At the present time, burning them is our only option. But it only works if you see the butterfly first. And for that, you need to lure it. Stay perfectly still until it lands. Good luck, he said, opening the cell door.
Kara stepped out into the dark corridor and cast her eyes around.
"It's coming back," she said fearfully, her voice muffled through the thick glass.
Lucy held her breath as the ghostly white glow of the butterfly danced toward them through the shadows. The insect fluttered onto Karis's sleeve and folded back its silky wings. First, it explored the crevices of her jacket. Then, with its fine antennae raised, it crawled over the hem of her sleeve and onto her exposed forearm.
"The match, now!" cried Harvey.
Karis hastily pressed the match to the strike pad, but it snapped in two. The butterfly bristled, its antennae stiffened. Karis pulled the box open, but her hands were shaking. Matches spilled out onto the floor. The butterfly's wings unfolded and descended symmetrically towards her skin. Harvey wrenched the cell door open and drew a lighter from his pocket. He seized Karis's wrist and sparked the flame, sending a streak of fire across her arm. Karis shrieked in fear, but he held her firmly, staring at the fire for 2 long seconds before throwing his lab coat over her arm and patting the flames out. Ruth flicked her light on. Karis tore herself away from Harvey and stared at her arm. Apart from a few singed hairs, she was unharmed, and there was no trace of the butterfly.
"What part of that could you not have done yourself?" said Lucy, stepping out of the cell with Ruth in tow.
"We've gained valuable data from Karis's bravery. We've learned that a failsafe is still necessary. But we've also expended my limited supply of the solution," said Harvey, locking up the cell behind them and returning Karis's flak jacket to her.
"Are there more of those things in this building?" said Ruth.
"Almost certainly. But they are outside as well. We must get to the safe zone. I've installed a rudimentary deterrent on level 5 where I've been producing the solution. If we can make it there, our chances of survival will be greatly improved. Follow me."
"What's the point of the damn siren if people are just as vulnerable indoors?"
"It's like sheltering from a rainstorm. You're less likely to get wet, but you're more likely to discover leaks you didn't know existed," said Harvey serenely.
They reached Alexei's body. He was still breathing, and his limbs had nudged forward since they left him, but he remained face down.
"Would you mind?" said Harvey.
He secured his gloves, then stooped down and took hold of Alexei's shoulder. Ruth pulled on her own gloves and took the other shoulder. They dragged Alexei clear of the elevator. Lucy caught the doors before they closed and peered inside for signs of other insects. Harvey laid Alexei back on the ground and stepped into the elevator.
There, Alexei, I'll be seeing you tomorrow. There's a good fellow."
The receptionist moaned faintly. The doors closed with a chime, eating the wedge of light that framed him. The elevator clunked upwards.
"He'll slip into a coma within the hour. From there, it will be a gentle goodbye. I'll retrieve the body first thing tomorrow, before it's completely degraded. It's always useful to have fresh samples to study," said Harvey.
As the elevator ascended, Ruth cocked her rifle and trained it on the doors. Lucy stared at the slit of light pulsing through the crack as they climbed, barely daring to blink. The elevator slowed to a halt. Karis pulled Lucy to the side, with Ruth and Harvey taking similar refuge positions against the opposite wall. With a ding, the doors slid open. Lucy peered through the gap into the level 5 lobby. It wasn't a level she'd been to before. Lopez was on the floor above, and Adrian on the one below. She hoped to God their floors were in a better state than the sight that greeted her. Bodies littered the ground. Some bore the bleach marks of dissolved wings. Others were covered in multiple butterflies, which crawled slowly over folds of clothing, looking for patches of bare skin. A handful fluttered a few inches above their prey, startled by the elevator's chime. One by one, they resettled on the nearest body.
"They're nesting. If we move slowly, we may be able to pass them undetected. Follow me."
The group stepped out and formed a line before the elevator. Harvey took 3 tentative steps along the corridor. The insects didn't respond. He beckoned the others to follow. The group walked in single file on tiptoes, weaving between the scattered bodies of scientists and soldiers. Karis gasped and stepped back sharply, causing Ruth to lose her balance as she tiptoed between insect-ridden bodies. Lucy's eyes flitted to what had caused Karis's fright. A technician lay paralyzed across the ground, face up, staring at the ceiling. Her ring finger twitched, almost imperceptibly. Lucy clocked the bleach mark across the woman's wrist. Her eyes flickered as a tear rolled down her cheek. The split second stretched out before Lucy as she suddenly yearned to be that woman, moments away from the end of it all. Her trance was shattered as quickly as it arrived. In an urgent bid to avoid collision with Karis and the surrounding bodies, Ruth had leapt to the side only to spot a ground-dwelling butterfly at the last second. Twisting away, she collided with a trolley, sending it tipping over with a clatter. Ruth cursed loudly as butterflies took off from the nearby body of a uniformed soldier. This time, they showed no signs of resettling. They spread out across the width of the corridor and swarmed towards the group.
"Run!" cried Harvey.
They sprinted through the hallway, dodging gurneys and bodies as they ran for the safe zone. Breathlessly, the group tumbled across a strip of metal that lined the hallway from floor to ceiling like a picture frame. It looked rickety, made from scavenged parts with stray wires and bolts protruding from the sides. Harvey turned to the wall, panting, and stared into a retina scanner, then punched in a code. The device bleeped twice. The ceiling lights blinked out across the corridor. He turned to face the oncoming insects, panting as they fluttered towards the group. Ruth and Lucy hopelessly tried the locked doors around them. The corridor was a dead end.
"Harvey!" cried Karis.
The growing swarm twisted towards them in a mesmerizing glow. Somewhere, in the back of her mind, Lucy felt a distant inclination to run, but her limbs felt soft. She was transfixed. All of a sudden, the first wave of butterflies vanished from the air. The next wave followed suit, disappearing with a faint popping sound. This was followed by a gentle pitter-patter as drops of gen water fell onto the silver base strip.
"Success!" declared Harvey, looking to the group for a celebration that was not reciprocated.
"What just happened?"
said Lucy dazedly.
"That, my dear Lucy, is classified. However, in light of Karis here being so wonderfully obliging with our little experiment earlier, I suppose I might share a modest detail or two with you. It's a sound barrier, a hypersonic wall of sound energy undetectable to our humble human ears, but which can, in the right circumstance, induce spontaneous despecialization in D4 creatures. Goodness, I really am telling you too much. It's strictly confidential. Military stuff. You know what they're like about these things," said Harvey as the popping sounds abated.
Lucy stared at the small puddle of gen water forming across the silver barrier. The handful of remaining butterflies had abandoned the chase and returned to the easier pickings of the fallen humans behind.
"You'll need to clear this up. Some of it could respawn," said Lucy warily.
"Quite. Although, as you can see, I'm a little short-staffed right now. I'll ask Adrian to send through a cleanup team. That is, assuming they survived. For now, I must press on with our top priority. You are all familiar with the blood pouches. I hope you are as impressed by their performance as I have been. Based on the trials so far, the government have urgently commissioned more. I could use your assistance in meeting this demand."
"Using the blood of an infected soldier to protect those who are clean? Tell me, Director. Do the soldiers wearing his blood know the truth? Do they know how whoever, suffered to produce it?"
said Lucy.
"Ah, I believe you are referring to Patient Zero. Adrian and I had really hoped a stint in the country might rest that particular, shall we say, distraction of yours," said Harvey.
Lucy bit her tongue. She needed to keep Harvey on her side if she wanted to find Lopez, and for that she needed to regain access to the level 6 lab above them. But it wasn't easy. The way he dismissed Lopez's mistreatment made Lucy's blood boil. She clenched her fists and forced a civil smile.
"Soldiers are loyal. They might not take kindly to the reality underpinning your method. It would seem unwise to commit significant resources to producing a solution that is deemed unacceptable by its end users. We may risk wasting a lot of time if, say, some soldiers were to object to being clothed in the byproduct of human rights violations."
An expression of weary disappointment fell across Harvey's face. Lucy immediately regretted her slide into the emotive language. Harvey polished his glasses in a gesture that signaled he was preparing to leave.
From the pilots I've been running in the city, I don't think that's an issue we'll have.
Lucy floundered.
Durability. That's your biggest issue, said Karis, intervening. The bags need replacing every few days, don't they? What if we found an alternative? One that doesn't expire?
Lucy tugged the jar of white powder out of her pocket.
And what might this be?
Said Harvey, pulling on his glasses and turning the container in his hands.
D4 cancer. It kills the creatures. What you're holding right there was grown on a D4 specimen we captured on the farm, said Lucy.
You're telling me you've discovered a bioweapon?
Said Harvey with an unusually visible degree of skepticism. It works as a defense, too. What we're telling you is surely good news for everyone. You can stop using the blood because this is the way forward, said Lucy.
Harvey continued to turn the jar over in his hands. Either the powder you've provided here is potent enough to protect an entire city, or there's a lot of work yet to be done. Which is it?
His cheery Santa Claus manner was slipping.
This is proof of concept, began Lucy.
Forgive my cynicism, Lucy, but the proof you're bringing me is purely anecdotal. I will need to see its effects replicated in laboratory conditions before I can even countenance halting the blood method.
Of course, we can totally do that, but we'll need a couple of days.
I look forward to talking in due course, then, once you have something meaningful to show.
Will you halt the blood production until then? Said Karis.
What the pair of you seem to be failing to grasp is the urgency of the situation. I have thousands of soldiers to protect, and tens of thousands of civilians all waiting for a breakthrough. You can't seriously expect me to go to the government and tell them I'm abandoning the one scalable solution we've found so far on account of one unconfirmed sample. Think about it. There is gallons of infected blood ready to be tapped, and a city on the brink of collapse. Halting is not a luxury we have. I have no grand philosophical objection to your alternative. I'm all about the best solutions. If you can make this work, I'll gladly recommend it to the government. But you'll need to prove you can scale it up before they'll listen.
Lucy stared at him, crestfallen.
What's that?
Said Ruth, interrupting and pointing to a laboratory door in the corridor they'd traversed. The glass pane was shattered, revealing a glimpse into a room full of green light and broken glass tanks filled with plants. A pair of butterflies drifted out through the window space and into the corridor, where they settled on a fallen human.
Harvey, did the butterflies come from this lab? Said Karis, her tone darkening.
Harvey returned Lucy's jar to her, then glanced at the broken window with casual interest, as if seeing it for the first time.
An unfortunate coincidence, it would seem. A mass spawning event outside and an accident in the research facility trying to study the very same insects, said Harvey.
Bullshit,
said Lucy, eyeing him up. The siren outside ceased and was replaced with a repeating pattern of chimes.
No matter. As you can hear, these incidents are over soon enough. Our winged friends are short-lived beings, said Harvey, facing the corridor.
Lucy's mouth dropped as the butterflies vanished en masse, dissolving into the humans beneath them, or if they weren't on skin, simply degrading to gen water on the spot. In a matter of seconds, all trace of the insects had gone.
Wait, you knew what would happen? Said Karis.
This is our third attack in 2 days. We've learned that it's a storm one can ride out,
said Harvey with a twinkle as he tapped another code into the silver barrier device. It was shut down with a bleep, and the overhead lights came back on.
If you knew it was temporary, why the hell did you use me as live bait? Fumed Karis.
Then drag the rest of us up here, added Ruth. It was an invaluable opportunity to study the insects in action. We must seize these chances, or we will never progress. But why the hell didn't you leave that thing on before now? This hallway device, all these people? Could have been saved if you'd turned it on sooner and told them where the safe side was, said Ruth.
It's a prototype, ma'am, and with that comes 2 problems. Firstly, it rather drinks electricity. That is power which could otherwise go to life support machines, heart monitors, police radios, and so on. Secondly,
I've only tested it once before. That is not sufficient data to merit a rollout.
I don't buy it. How come you're the only one who can turn it on? I know your type. You were saving it for yourself, spat Ruth. Science often presents us with difficult truths. To test the efficacy of a given solution, one requires control subjects. I can tell from the reaction on your face that you're not a scientist. Please, before you hit me, as I believe you're contemplating doing, consider that I did not infect or injure the people you see before you. I have been entirely passive in their fate. Furthermore, I must ask you, what good would it have done to tell them about the device? Think for a moment. Word would have spread across the hospital. As soon as the siren sounded, people would have flocked here from across the city, all seeking shelter behind the magical barrier. This would undoubtedly have caused dangerous overcrowding. You will note that we are not in the largest of spaces. Aside from the fighting and crushing that would have ensued, there would have remained a great density of bystanders caught on the other side of that shiny silver strip. This would, in fact, have increased the number of butterfly victims. These are the unpleasant factors we must consider when keeping things secret.
That is the last time you use me as an experiment, fumed Karis.
And yet you seem perfectly happy to wear the results of others' experiments. You're welcome to return your jacket, should the protection it affords you upset your sensibilities, said Harvey, smiling warmly and gesturing to Karis's yellow-striped flak jacket.
She glared at him. In the next 24 hours, we will have the proof you need that our solution works. Within 48 hours, we'll prove it can work at scale. For that, we need lab space. How about level 6? Said Lucy.
Any particular reason? Said Harvey, raising his eyebrows.
I'm familiar with its layout, said Lucy, blushing.
No doubt. Alas, level 6 is out of the question. Level 3 has capacity, though. It should prove ample for your needs, said Harvey.
If we're going to capture more creatures quickly, we'll need support, said Ruth.
I'll make a call. If that's truly your plan, and I salute you for it, you will have the greatest chance of success in the Dead Zone. There are any number of creatures there, and I trust they will be of the size you require. However, I should warn you, venturing in there without protection would be something of a death wish. Your present jackets will expire tonight. I highly recommend you replace the linings.
Assuming, of course, that is acceptable to your ethical requirements, said Harvey, with a masterful faux innocence.
The three glared at him silently while the all-clear alarm chimed in the background. Gen water dripped from worktops and windowsills. Harvey swiped into the adjacent door and revealed a climate-controlled store cupboard, holding bags of blood stacked neatly on floor-to-ceiling shelves. Lucy's stomach churned at the quantity.
Please, he said, handing each of them a cool, fresh pouch.
Harvey reached under his sweater and pulled out the pouch he himself was wearing, swapping it for a new one.
Oh, chilly, he said with a chuckle, ushering them back out. Now, as I mentioned, I have a shipment to deliver for the military. Do excuse me.
Wait. Harvey, you mentioned Patient Zero earlier, said Lucy, trying her utmost to sound offhand, like it was purely a scientific inquiry.
Indeed I did. Should you make it back from the Dead Zone, perhaps we can discuss him further. I would be interested to hear your thoughts. Good luck with the hunt. I do hope this isn't the last time we meet, replied the director.
Lucy stared at the stock cupboard, unable to dismiss the rows of blood bags within. It hurt her bitterly to admit it, but Lopez would have to wait.